One of the most frustrating experiences that we are bound to have in life is being overwhelmed by a deep sense of disappointment. Each and every one of us has or will have a number of these moments of disappointment as we make our way through life. There will come a day for all of us when the things that we have hoped for and waited for and worked for completely fail to live up to our expectations. And this is one of those hard lessons of life, that there's often a gap between our personal expectations and the reality of the real world. We start off with the best of intentions. We're full of hope and anticipation. We muster up our determination to try and achieve some lofty goal, perhaps. Maybe we decide to try and live out that dream that we've carried with us for so long. Maybe we're ready to fulfill some calling we have in our lives. And we pour everything that we have into this effort. We invest ourselves completely. We make sacrifices on the way. We put ourselves completely on the line for this. But then once we've achieved our goal, or at least reached it, we realize that it looks nothing at all like what we thought it would. And whenever this kind of thing happens, we're often left with that painful sting of disappointment. It was about 20 years ago now, halfway through my seminary career, that I decided I wanted to pursue my doctorate. It was a standard practice at Boston University to read one book a week for each of the classes that you were taking. It was intense, but I loved it. And I was told that the doctoral program was really more like reading two books a week for each class. So after I finished my master's, I began working on my doctorate. And I'd been dreaming of this moment for probably 5 years. This was my concrete goal. This was my ticket to someday being able to teach in a seminary or theological school. But in a matter of just a few months, I realized it wasn't at all like what I was expecting. The workload was more like reading five books a week for each of the classes. And now the students had to teach the class, and we also had to write about five pages of paper each and every week. And the professors who had been so encouraging and so nurturing along the way during seminary suddenly became ruthless. Their critiques were horrible. It was like this Jekyll and Hyde flip-flop. Now, I went in there expecting just a more intense version of what I'd already known, but found myself in a military boot camp. And so at the end of the first semester, I withdrew. Sometimes the gap between what we're expecting and what the reality turns out to be can be pretty large. Parenthood, if you don't have kids, can sometimes look like a dream from afar. But then when you finally do have kids, you never dream because you never sleep. And there are the 2 a.m. feedings and the emergency trip at 4 a.m. to get diapers at CVS. Later on, you're worrying about broken hearts and cyberbullying. You're waiting up half the night for your teenager to come home. And you love being a parent, but sometimes you just didn't realize it would be this hard. Or the new job, it seems so amazing and you're so excited that you've got it, until you discover that that one line down the bottom of your job description that says other duties as assigned is actually your entire job. And in a matter of time, you just feel like you're drowning in this deluge of useless tasks that have nothing to do at all with why you took the job in the first place. So between those expectations that we have and the hard realities of life, there's a gap, and sometimes it's a chasm. And just as it's true for each and every one of us, it was true also for John the Baptist. Now, if you were here last Sunday, we met up with John at the River Jordan. He's the semi-obnoxious, bold, confident, eccentric preacher who lives out in the wilderness. He eats honey and grasshoppers. And standing knee-deep in the chilly rivers of the Jordan, John is preaching to the thousands who show up, who want to hear this message of repentance. And he cries out, "Beware, get ready, the Messiah is about to arrive," and flip everything upside down. Nothing will ever be the same again. Now, in our passage for this morning, Jesus says this is why John was sent. John's whole life has been leading up to this moment. He's announcing that the Messiah is coming and that this is going to be the start of a whole new realm of existence. It's going to be the beginning of something truly great. And we know that right from the start, John has been ready. He's been preparing for this task. His mission is to announce the reign of God. And so in John, we find this figure of pure embodiment. He knows the scriptures. He prays and meditates under the canopy of the stars. He's a holy man who leads this very disciplined life. And he's always scribbling out sermon notes for his next willing victim. But John isn't interested in preaching funny or even endearing sermons. He's no smiling Joel Osteen who wants to help you live a better life now. John's sermons are hard, and they have a way of touching a nerve and digging deep. He knows how to make people feel really uncomfortable. And so last Sunday, we heard how he accosted this group of religious leaders, of civic leaders, of military leaders, and told them what they needed to do. He says, "You pack of vipers, you brood of snakes, repent. Turn your lives around." And so he doesn't pepper his sermons with funny illustrations or gentle thoughts to consider in the future. He's not there to nurture or encourage you. He meets you with a crowbar and an axe and a blowtorch. And John wants to clear away all the dead wood that's in your life so that something new can sprout up and begin to grow. And the surprising thing we know is that John's approach actually works. The people come to see John, they wander into the Jordan, and they're baptized. They clean up their lives and are ready to begin again. They're waiting for something extraordinary to happen. They're waiting for the Messiah to arrive. But in the months that follow these mass baptisms, things take an unexpected turn for John, and it's not good news. In this morning's story, we find John and his public ministry has finally come to an end. The last sermon that John preaches is to Herod Antipas, who's the ruler of Galilee. And it's a bit complicated, but Herod Antipas has married one of his brother's daughters, a young woman named Herodias. So in other words, Herod Antipas married his niece. Now, if you think that marrying your niece is bad enough, and I hope you do, what's even worse is that Herodias, his niece, is already married to another one of the brothers. So in other words, Herod Antipas, the ruler of Galilee, stole his brother's wife who happened to be his other brother's daughter. You get that? It's the kind of scandalous thing that you might find on Days of Our Lives or The Young and the Restless. And it's this kind of sleazy situation that John loves to preach about. And if you ever needed a sermon illustration for the need of repentance or to clean up your life, this would certainly be it. And so for John, this looked like a grand slam. And John preaches his sermon. He lets Herod Antipas have it. And then, to no one's surprise, it turns out to be John's very last sermon that he ever preaches. John is tossed in prison, and he's never going to be heard from again. And so just like that, his ministry is over, and he's silenced. His fate is now sealed, and all we have is this little tiny fragment of this story that's tucked into the middle of Matthew's gospel. And so while John is pacing the cold stone floor of his prison cell with his dream and expectation unfulfilled, he asks his own disciples to go out and send a message to Jesus. And he asks, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we wait for another?" And if you listen, you can hear the gap between the expectation and the reality. In a way, John is asking, "Was I wrong about you, Jesus? Am I just too late to the party? After everything that I've done to prepare the people for you, did I get it all wrong? Are things all over now? If you're really the one, Jesus, then when are you going to start acting like it? When are you going to do something really, truly grand?" Now, it's a difficult thing for John to comprehend. All those fire and brimstone sermons and all those mass wilderness baptisms, it seems almost unbelievable that John would start to have second thoughts about this. But if we frame John's question and reflect on our own lives, we think about this in the context of our own doubts or uncertainties about who Jesus really is, then we can get a sense of what was happening inside John. Now, anyone who's ever struggled to believe that Jesus is the Messiah can understand John's confusion. John had to come to terms with the fact that Jesus didn't live up to anyone's expectations. We know that all the Jewish prophets of the day offered a very clear picture of what things would look like when the Messiah finally arrives. And when you compare that ancient prophecy to the way that things are in the real world, it can seem like something went amiss. And so it's normal to wonder what on earth happened. They're obviously two different things. Isaiah promised that when the Messiah arrives, there will be no more suffering and sorrow, that swords will be hammered into plowshares, that spears will be turned into pruning hooks. And this is how you'll know it's the Messiah, says Isaiah. Amos says, justice will roll down like thunder and righteousness like an everlasting stream. And then Isaiah says again, the wolf will lie down with the lamb, and the leopard will lie down with the goat, and the calf and the lion and the yearling together. But when we look around the world, we still see that gap between the expectation we have and the reality of the way things are. As Woody Allen once said, the wolf might lay down with the lamb, but the lamb isn't going to be getting much sleep. So what's the sense that we are to make in our modern world? Jesus, if you're the one, why are there still wars in our world? And on our streets, and in our families. Jesus, if you are really the one, why do 20% of our children go to school hungry each day? Jesus, if you're really the one, why is a quarter of Africa's population still dying from AIDS? Jesus, if you're really the one, why are there almost 15 million homeless refugees fleeing violence in search of food and safety? It's a stark picture of where we are today, and it's vastly different from what Isaiah and Amos and the other prophets promised. So when John asks this question about Jesus, he's not just asking for himself, but asking for everyone. And that's the question that we too must ask. Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? And so John's in his prison cell, he's pacing back and forth, he's sitting around waiting, and the message comes back via his own disciples that Jesus said, go and tell people what you have seen and heard. In that message, Jesus tells John, the blind are receiving their sight, the deaf can now hear, the lame can walk, the lepers are cleansed, even the dead are sometimes brought back to life. Go and tell John what you've seen and heard. And what John wanted to know is exactly what each and every one of us would love to know, that our problems will be solved, that our pains will cease, that the enemies in our lives would be victorious, we would be victorious over them, or our lives would be vindicated, or that our prayers would be answered, or that the good work that we have worked so hard on would bear some visible fruit. Now, sometimes we're given the advice that it's important to be able to see the forest through the trees. And with that wisdom means you can rise above your problems and be able to see the big picture. That way you don't get bogged down in the trivialities and details and lose perspective overall. And there's great wisdom in this advice. But sometimes we have to get our heads out of the clouds and keep our feet back on the ground where we live, so that we can learn to see the trees through the forest. And so what Jesus is saying is that sometimes you have to look at the specific trees. You have to pay attention to the things that are right in front of you. Jesus says, go and tell John what you've seen and heard. The blind now see 20/20. The lame have a spring in their step. The deaf hear beautiful music. The dead have been brought back to life. And so what Jesus is saying is that the Messiah doesn't arrive with some magic wand to chase away the shadows and instead light up the world with a flip of the switch. Instead, the Messiah comes and meets one life at a time. So to the one who is blind, the Messiah shows new possibilities. To the one whose life is paralyzed with fear, the Messiah gives strength. To the one who feels completely forgotten, the Messiah brings comfort. And so if you're always standing and staring at the forest, you will miss the beautiful things that are happening right at the foot of the tree, in and out of the trees. But you have to look closely. But when you do, you'll see surprising things happen. So the question for us this Advent is, what are the things that we see and hear in our lives? How do we recognize the Messiah's work all around us in our world? Because we know that every now and then, and often the most surprising of ways, the Messiah shows up, most often in disguise, and that's why we're bound to miss it when it happens. But the Messiah will be found in the things that we see and hear in our day-to-day life. Now, whenever Jews celebrate the Passover Seder meal, there's this great tradition where they leave a seat open for the prophet Elijah. And tradition says that Elijah will one day show up and bring good news of the Messiah. Elijah will announce that the time has finally come. And in the Passover Seder meal, during the service, there's this one moment where the door is flung open wide and everyone turns to look to see if Elijah will come through the door. But all that ever happens is just wind. And so as the Jews wait patiently for the day when that expectation and that reality become one. And so I'll leave you with this one story. It's a story of a pious Jewish man who's speaking to his rabbi. And the man says to his rabbi, for more than 40 years now, I have flung open the door waiting for Elijah to arrive, but he never comes. What's the reason for this? And the rabbi says, in your neighborhood, there's a very poor family with a great many children. Call on that man and propose to him that you and your family will celebrate the next Passover meal at his house. And tell him that you will make all the preparations necessary for the full 8 days of Passover. And then on that Seder night, Elijah will certainly come. So the pious man goes and does what the rabbi teaches, but after the Passover, that pious man comes back to the rabbi and says that he waited for Elijah to show up and bring good news of the Messiah, but he's afraid that he once again waited in vain. But the rabbi says to the pious man, I know very well that Elijah came to the Seder meal that night at the house of your poor neighbor. But of course, you couldn't see him. And then the rabbi reached down and picked up a mirror and held it to the man's face and said, see, this is the face of Elijah. So every now and then, and sometimes the most surprising of ways, sometimes the strangest of places, even in you, even in us, even in others, God shows up. Thanks be to God.